ladies and gentlemen. Put on your listening ears, your thinking caps, and a fresh pair of socks, because it's time for another thrilling episode of Sorry We Tried. This week, we're doing something a little more difficult than normal. You see, this is just some real talk time in the intro while this music is still going in the background. In the aftermath of The Flash, the DC Extended Universe is very, very dead. That got our brains turning a little bit, right? What if we watched through every single DCEU movie and reviewed them on the show in the lead up to the franchise being reborn in 2 years? It shouldn't take that long to get through them, though. But today's episode is a special one, because we're discussing the franchise's stunning opening chapter, Man of Steel. If you don't like it, well,
we're sorry we tried.
My favorite part of that was we said it, and he goes, he like takes two fingers and taps him on his chin and just goes,
it was so good.
We got about halfway through it, and I figured it'd be awkward if I jumped in then, and the mic was off, and so I was like, well, this is gonna be weird, so I just didn't jump in at all.
Asleep on the third row, Robbie Owens. Yeah.
Well, hello and welcome to Sorry We Tried. As always, I am not your host, but I am the one who talks first. My name is Spencer Gilliland. And pulling the strings on the ones and twos, Prince of all Saiyans, Harrison Brock.
What is up, y'all?
And proudly reigning from the third chair, the big kahuna, Robert and Robbie Owens.
That's me. I got nothing for that one.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting kind of weak.
Can you introduce me again? I didn't think of something till like 3 seconds after.
Oh, can we do spots. That? Can we cut out our first? Just act like you said it for the first time.
I vote we keep the whole thing in, but introduce me again.
Okay. Pulling the strings on the ones and twos, Prince of all Saiyans, Harrison.
Kakarot!
You didn't let me finish that time.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get it out.
You're welcome.
Now, what I'll do is I'll leave in the part where he says he wants me to go back and read it again.
And then cut it.
I'll cut the part where I read it again. Just for chaos. And I'll leave this part in.
So that everybody knows what's happening.
Or maybe I'll take this part
stupid.
Out too. Just whatever will make everyone the most confused. But anyway, we're running a little bit low on time here, so we'll have to kind of steamroll right into this. It's Man of Steel. We're talking about Man of Steel this week.
Yes.
Before we do that, I did some extensive research on Wikipedia.
The most trusted source on the internet.
About kind of a lot of the background and development of this movie. What year did Man of Steel come out? Shut up! At least I remember to do the intro.
2013.
2013, yeah.
Is that the standard now? Is that the bar? You remembering to do the intro?
I mean, if you didn't do it, then...
You don't want me doing the intro, so...
Well...
We should do that one time just to ensue chaos. For the listeners, that'd be very fun.
Just how
like,
you guys
like
do it?
Completely roll swap because I couldn't do what he does. I can't.
I could practice for it.
I say I'll do Spencer. Spencer has to work the soundboard. And then Harrison gets to just sit there like me goes. And be unprepared. That's what Harrison gets to do.
I mean, I have the intro written out. If you got like, we can do that next time.
No, but then that's not authentic. I have to write the intro myself.
Okay. Yeah. I guess so. But leading up to 2013 when Man of Steel came out, there was a lot of chaos in the Superman front. Because I don't know if you remember. There was Superman 4 in like the 80s, right?
The quest for peace.
And it sucked. And it was really bad. And everyone in the world hated it. And then there was nothing until Superman Returns in like... When did that
movie 2006.
Go? 2006. Yeah, so there's a lot of time between the 80s and 2006, obviously. And there were a lot of Batman movies between that time.
Yeah, that was actually where most of the Batman movies happened.
Yeah, so you might be thinking... Why weren't there any Superman movies in the rest of the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s? It's because no one knew what the frick to do with Superman for that entire, like, 30-year span. So there was, like, a smattering of unmade movies that were put into production and then canceled, like, as chaos completely reigned. And just for fun, I'd like to kind of, like, catalog some of the weirder things I learned about these movies. So in 1995... there was a movie version of Death of Superman that was being made that was going to include Superman's life force going into Lois Lane after he dies, causing her to undergo a virgin birth. And in 3 weeks, the baby would grow to be 21 years old and become the new Superman.
Oh, dude, that was Patty Jenkins at the crisp age of 15.
Now, you might be wondering,
is
why
that
would
not the premise of Wonder Woman
1884? 1884?
Hey, yeah.
Same difference.
Well, hey, Wonder Woman in the 1880s was wild, man. That's a whole different time period.
Yeah. So, you might be thinking, Spencer, why on earth would Warner Brothers pass on such an amazing script like that? apparently, the only reason they didn't like it was because it was had similar themes to Batman Forever.
That's the only reason?
That was the only reason they didn't like that.
Did Batman also...
So the birth was fine? The virgin birth was okay?
The fact that Lois Lane was going to undergo the virgin birth and birth out the new Superman.
They're like, that's okay, but... Too Schumacher-y.
They were like, I think it was the idea that of like trauma leading to heroism or something. They said they don't. That was too similar to Batman Forever.
Trauma
I don't
leads
know.
To heroin, not heroism.
I don't know. That's all that Wikipedia said.
Was that? That's not the Nicolas Cage.
No, that's
movie,
completely
right?
different.
Wasn't that in the early 90s? I don't want to like jump ahead.
I have no idea the time scale of that one.
I think it
was, that
was early
like,
90s.
Yeah, that was over a long span
because
of time.
Because it was set to be the Superman of the Burton universe for a long time, right?
Yeah, so kind of like what Robbie was talking about, Tim Burton at one point was going to do a movie called Superman Lives featuring Nicolas Cage as Superman, and that story is so bizarre and so complex that we're going to have to do a full episode on it at some point, yeah. Because, God, there's a lot, but that didn't happen, obviously, until he cameoed in The Flash this year.
Until his ghost cameoed in The Flash, because...
Oh, man.
And this is one...
His astral projection
well, I was gonna
of
say,
his ghost.
Unless everybody else was dead. They probably just killed Nick yeah. Cage and then threw his ghost. They're like, it's not authentic unless they're dead.
Unless we resurrect somebody with CGI against their will. It's not
Yikes.
Authentic. But the next one was in 2002, J.J. Abrams wrote a script mm-hmm. for a movie called Superman: Man of Steel that was incorrectly called Superman Flyby by the internet for all of time.
Really?
There's a lot of stuff going on with this one, too. And Henry Cavill was actually cast in the role in this movie when it was going to be made. He also tried out for Superman Returns.
Was he cast in Flyby?
I remember that he was cast.
Oh.
Interesting.
I think you're right. I think he wasn't the studio's first choice. There were a few people that they offered the contract to, but because it was originally set to be like a multiple movie uh-huh. situation, a lot of people turned it down. Huh. But then, yeah, there's like a picture somewhere on the internet of Henry Cavill screen testing for this movie.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's fun that he was cast
yeah.
in that. There's a lot of weird details about this one too, but this one, like Krypton in this iteration was still like around, like it didn't blow up. So that was the one memorable detail out of that. So eventually,
sorry.
So what did you have?
No, I didn't.
Doesn't
want,
that
I don't
defeat
wanna,
the whole Superman story?
Well, I don't. Like I said, I don't want to step on like what you're doing, but like, do you remember we talked about this before? One of the Warner Brothers executives didn't want Zack Snyder to destroy the pod in Man of Steel or something like that because they were like, how else is he going to get home? And then they had to look at the Warner Brothers guy and go, Krypton blew up. That was like the first 20 minutes of the movie.
Gosh.
But yeah, you'd be surprised how many people don't know that Krypton is supposed to die. That's kind of like the catalyst for all of this.
Yeah. Warner Brothers executives are really stupid.
Do you know That'd the reason like, why it was still like what's the reason for Superman coming to Earth if his planet
doesn't
get blown to...
There was like the whole summary. The full script is out there. Yeah. I just didn't take the
I didn't know if
it.
You had a quick answer
yeah,
or
I
something.
No. So eventually they got to making Superman Returns in 2006, only for it to not really do that well critically or commercially because it's not great. There was going to be a sequel called Man of Steel. Before that was scrapped.
Really?
Completely, yeah.
I knew the sequel. I didn't know the name was going to be Man of
Steel.
They were
saying maybe it was going to be Brainiac as a villain or Darkseid as a villain.
Huh.
You know, but they didn't end up doing that because Superman Returns was so boring. They're like, oh, yeah, we have to do something really, really boring.
It was
too exciting.
An extremely boring movie.
If it's not about Lex Luthor doing a real estate scheme, then what's even the point? So they canceled it. So in 2008, obviously this is like post-Dark Knight. Warner Brothers decides to go just completely back to the drawing board. So they're taking, they take a bunch of pitches from like a bunch of writers and directors and comic book creators for like a reboot. And the most interesting of these that I found was a team up between Mark Miller and Matthew Vaughn, who was the guy who directed First Class.
Yeah.
He pitched an epic 8-hour Superman trilogy with each installment released a year apart, like Lord of the Rings. And he said he suggested that Charlie Cox was going to play Superman. That was
no
his choice.
No way.
Really?
That's so cool. And that was in 2008?
Mm-hmm.
That's
how
wild.
Old was he?
I don't know. He was at least one. He was alive.
I'm going to look up.
He had to have been in his 20s back then.
That is so strange because he didn't get cast as Daredevil until like late 2014.
Yeah. So
dude's got to be in like his 30s,
Charlie
maybe
Cox,
40 now.
Charlie Cox, 2008. Well, yeah, he's like, I'm just... That's an interesting vision to have.
Charlie Cox is like super. Like, can you imagine Superman trilogy released like Lord of the Rings, like yearly?
I would be really interested to see how that would pan out.
That is interesting. I didn't know anything about that. That's interesting.
He's 40 years old, by the
There's
way.
There's even more Superman.
So he would have been right around 20
than
years
I thought.
Old.
Yeah. So, like I mentioned before, 2008. That was when The Dark Knight came out, right?
Yeah.
That year.
Mm-hmm.
So. Christopher Nolan and the screenwriter of that, I have his name written down, David S. Goyer, they were workshopping ideas for The Dark Knight Rises. And at that time, I completely lost my place in my notes. Everything was sort of hinging on whether Nolan was going to come back and do a third one because it was up in the air for a little bit. The Dark Knight had made $1 billion, so it's like, okay, we're going to let this guy do what he wants. So they were doing the story meetings for Dark Knight Rises at that point. And David S. Goyer tells Nolan his pitch for how he would do modern-day Superman. Nolan loves the pitch and then goes to Warner Brothers and says, hey, I'll produce this. You guys should make this version of Superman. And there was a little bit of up-in-the-air time where it was like, maybe this will be in the Dark Knight continuity, maybe it won't. But they ended up going on it being separate because they wanted Nolan to be able to have his trilogy as like a standalone unit of movies set apart from the rest of the DC universe.
Yeah.
So they also put in like the rough plans to set up a larger universe in this time.
There was a theory for a long time, and it was kind of a big deal back in the day, but like when everybody debated like whether or not Bruce Wayne blew up at the end of The Dark Knight Rises or if he autopilot ejected or whatever, there was a theory out there that Superman was the one that saved Batman in that scene. And I remember that was like, although it was like not likely at all, people were saying that it was like Henry Cavill's Superman saving him and that Christian Bale was still gonna be Batman, but it wouldn't have made sense and it would have destroyed that last movie.
Yeah, so that they started approaching a bunch of different directors for this. Yeah, I told you we needed to go for 30. So some of the weird ones included Guillermo del Toro, Robert Zemeckis, Ben Affleck, and Matt Reeves. They were all approached to direct Man of Steel.
Really?
Zack Snyder was hired in 2010, and so talking about casting, this is the interesting part. So obviously Henry Cavill had been cast in Superman Flyby, and he had lost the role to Brandon Routh in Superman Returns, but there were some interesting candidates for this one too. They also considered Tyler Hoechlin, who plays him in that TV show, Armie Hammer.
Oh, let's not talk about him.
And Joe Manganiello, who plays Deathstroke in these movies.
And also Flash Thompson and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man.
And Cavill said that his version of the character was inspired by four comics: The Death of Superman, The Return of Superman, Superman Red Son, and Superman / Batman The Search for Kryptonite. Which those are some really interesting choices.
Wait, Henry Cavill said he was inspired by Red Son?
Yeah.
Like the Soviet era Superman?
The one where Superman's the dictator of the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said he was inspired by that.
Huh. Interesting.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
That would explain the direction they took in BVS. But,
but yeah, that is how we got to here. So, knowing all of that, and I'll see how much of that ended up cutting out, what did you guys think of this one, coming back to it, especially after everything has exploded the way that it has?
Honestly, I thought it. I remembered enjoying it and really liking Man of Steel when it came out and when I watched it, but it held up way better than I expected for it to. Because it came out how many years ago now? Like 10 years or something?
Yeah, 10 years. 2013.
Yeah. So, I mean, the visual effects, the acting, the casting, the writing, I thought it held up super, super well. It's still, without a doubt, my favorite Superman movie that they've made.
There's not a lot of stiff competition there.
Yeah.
to be fair.
But still,
yeah, it's I think...
It's still a very good movie, even 10 years later.
Yeah. And
which you can't say about most superhero movies at all.
Most Zack Snyder superhero movies.
Yeah, those two.
But what was interesting about this one to me is I was on record for a very long time as a Snyder hater. Still kind of am.
Boo.
But I didn't see this one until after I saw Batman v Superman, I think.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know why. But
that is interesting.
It's really, and we'll talk more about this because we're talking about Batman v Superman next time. But it's really interesting contrasting those two movies, because this one tonally, it doesn't fit the Zack Snyder stereotypes of like edgy, grim, dark. Mm. You know, yeah. the screen is literally so dark you can't see anything that's happening.
No.
Anything like that, because it's a lot brighter and more optimistic, even with like the horrific disaster scene at the end. Like, it's not a depressing, grim movie.
Well, and I look, you know that I'm probably going to defend most of what he does, but in terms of DC movies, I feel like he still went 2 for 3. Like, even if you absolutely hated Batman versus Superman, Justice League is not a depressing movie either. Justice League, all things considered, it carries tonally almost in the same way that Man of Steel does. It just seems like Batman versus Superman for some reason just took a really dark, dark turn. It doesn't feel tonally in line with the other two movies at all.
It doesn't even feel like a sequel to this movie, which we'll get into next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know. This one is really special. Mm-hmm. I think he does understand the character a lot better than people give him credit for, just because in the second one, he takes a big dump all over the character.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I have a list of notes. I'm sure you guys also took notes. So yeah. I'm just going to randomly skip around some of this stuff. What do you guys think of like all the time jump flashback where it's like jumping back and forth out of sequence?
I was okay with it. But I liked how they did it, because they didn't just do it. Like, it wasn't a... Because, you know, like when people jump back in like memory mode in movies, mm-hmm. a lot of times they'll just have these like flashbacks at random times. What I liked about this was that, like, as Clark was traveling the world and he was interacting with all these things, certain things would remind him of very specific memories, mm-hmm. and they weren't all in order. And so it was mm-hmm. a jump around. But, like, for example, like, he sees the school bus on the side of the road, and then he remembers how he saved the school bus. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the situation at the bar where he encounters the dude that, you know, is a jerk, and then it takes him back to when the bullies were talking, you know, trying to beat him up back in the day or whatever. And there were other scenarios too that I can't remember, but I thought it was really creative how it was like very visually based. Like, as he was traveling to his objective, which was still advancing the story, it's like we were also getting glimpses back into like his past too. So, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think, like, kind of hitting on the visual, because I know you said the visual, and that got me thinking about the visuals of this movie hold up phenomenally.
Oh, yeah.
Which is so weird.
The CGI
because,
still looks good.
Yeah, it's
it
10
looks
years,
like something that dropped yesterday.
Yeah, it's 10 years old, but you compare it to something that came out last month, like The Flash,
yeah.
which directly like revisits this movie and does every aspect of it worse. It's really fascinating to see just like what a good director
who's
willing to give VFX artists time to get shots finished. You know, that's...
Yeah.
That's the difference.
It's also crazy to me that the cape was CGI, like, almost in every shot.
Yeah.
It looks so good.
It doesn't look CGI.
Yeah, it didn't look CGI at all.
The more examples that we see, the more that I believe that CGI is almost at this point completely director dependent. It's not as much about...
you just have to allocate time and budget to it.
Yeah, but even with budget, you know how much money was spent on the Flash's CGI? So it's like, it's not even necessarily a budget thing. And also, I mean, to be fair, I will play devil's advocate just a little bit. I mean, Man of Steel wasn't reshot like 6 times, but the Flash has been passed around like nothing. But even so, yeah, I mean, the CGI in this movie looks like in 15, 20 years, we watch this movie and still say the CGI looks good, because it is really that good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's not just like the CGI, like just like the visual language. Mm-hmm. I think that is still Snyder's strength.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the, every single frame in these movies, like even
it's cohesive.
Even in the like Batman v Superman, which I don't like, every single frame is just really intentionally crafted.
Yeah.
And like the costume design and the set design, and it's just all... It's like all very intentionally put together.
And it looks like a big budget movie. It feels like some of these movies these days, especially superhero movies, comic book movies these days, don't look like big budget movies.
Yeah, they look like
but
money
they
laundering
are, apparently.
Operations. Yeah.
I mean, it looks like an episode of The Wiggles. It's like not the same. But the one thing that I don't think anybody really argues about Zack is that he made his movies look like movies and look really, really good in the process. And that was pretty abundantly clear too, like in the contrast between like Justice League 2017 and Zack Snyder's Justice League, which, you know, not get into that. I just mean he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, just there's like a couple of nitpicks that I have with this movie, and we can get to those later, because there's a lot to like about this, and I feel like it's slept on and people don't really talk about it.
Yeah.
Also that soundtrack.
Yeah. I was going to talk about the sound, but the I feel like the legacy of BVS kind of eclipses this movie. It makes me sad. Like, the controversy around that has kind of made people ignore this one. So it is sad, because this is a really great movie that I think it's, even with this dead universe now that's freaking cursed, I think it's worth watching.
Yeah, I agree.
As a standalone experience. Yeah, just for the record, we set a timer for ourselves.
It's such a menacing color.
we're already over.
No, I agree. I think it may, like I said, the more I said this off air, but the more movies into this we get, the funner it's going to be for me, because the movies just get bad. But watching through Man of Steel specifically, but also, you know, I obviously defend Batman versus Superman in a way that you guys don't, but Man of Steel specifically, it just makes me sad watching it again, because it is such a great movie and it was such a great starting point. Mm-hmm. And I still remember how I felt coming out of the theater, because it was like they did everything they set out to do, and that was put a solid foundation down for their new universe, you know, set up potentially other franchises on top of that. Yep. And then they also made themselves tonally different from what Marvel was doing at the time.
Because it wasn't quippy, but it's also not like grim, dark.
It was like,
you know?
Charming is the word I feel like I would use.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not quippy. Yeah, it's not like every other line is a one-liner, but it's like it has its...
It had that sense of
feel.
Magic that like... obviously, it's a totally different kind of movie, and I'm not trying to compare the two. But like the first Star Wars movie, it has that same element of just a magic about it that just makes you want to watch whatever's next.
If that makes
any sense.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see where you're coming from there.
Just that sense of, oh, this was really cool.
Yeah.
I wonder what they're going to do with it, you know?
Yeah, well, I think when companies are building cinematic universes now, they forget that in order to do that, you kind of just have to make something that's really good that's standalone. And like has little hints in it.
Yeah.
Because like the first Iron Man, the reason that works as a foundation is not because the entire movie is like, hey, look at this thing. Hey, look at this other thing. Hey, look at this. It's just a standalone story that was solid and enjoyable. And then they were able to come in and build off that base. And I feel like Man of Steel is kind of a tragedy of missed potential.
Yeah.
Because there was such a solid foundation built in this. It's a great standalone experience with like such some little hints in there that they could use to build up a greater universe, and they just never really did it, because Warner Brothers is the dumbest company to ever walk this earth.
Well, and I will say this, because you know that this is one of my criticisms of it, and I know we briefly touched on it, but like you get to BVS and you get to Zack Snyder's Justice League, and it just feels like a completely different universe than the Man of Steel universe.
Yeah.
It's like you go back and watch Man of Steel, and you, like, in my head, I'm thinking, this is not the same universe we see in the next few movies. Like, this could, from this point, you could spawn an entirely new set of movies, and it still makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it was the perfect way to do it, and it was the perfect character to do it with.
Mm-hmm.
You start your universe with Superman.
And the perfect casting.
I don't care
too.
How much you love Batman. I love Batman to death, but Superman is the character to start your universe with, build around it, and him being the first alien introduced to the world makes perfect sense. And I thought it created such an interesting dynamic moving forward.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Henry Cavill, I stand by this. Henry Cavill, no matter what.
The best.
No matter what. No matter what you think of the movies, no matter what you think of the direction of the writing, he's the most perfectly cast Superman ever. I think under the right direction, he's everybody's favorite Superman. Mm-hmm. I think that the potential is there, even if you don't agree with the portrayal. But a lot of that doesn't really have to do with him, especially because I think that's another thing that's frustrating too, is I told Spencer this last night. He understands the character. He does. Mm-hmm. He talks about it all the time. He's been talking about for years how much he loves the character, and he clearly knows what he's talking. Mm-hmm. Other than those weird 2013 recommendations, I don't understand. He's shown that he understands the nuances of the Superman character. Yeah. And it does make me sad that he's been trying to get a movie like that made for so long, and he's come so close so many times, and then it just never happens.
Yeah, but it is weird though, and I think the biggest problem with the legacy of this movie, hence Superman Legacy, is the shadow of Batman v Superman, because all the complaints I hear about Henry's portrayal are from that movie.
Yeah.
There's none of that's here.
Yeah,
even the complaints about the way Zack Snyder does Superman. None of that's here either.
Yeah. Well, except, okay, I guess you could argue the Zod killing at the end people had problems with.
But Superman's killed Zod like 12 times in the comics
exactly.
before this.
And
yeah.
then the...
Well, and the way that they did it, they did a really good job with it. Like, if he was going to have a reason to kill Zod, they did that so well with him saving that family.
Yeah, it's not like he's going around slaughtering people all the time.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with it. And it made sense.
Like,
and not just that.
Thousands of people definitely died during that final scene.
It's a completely different situation from, like, for example, Ben Affleck in the next movie where he just slaughters a bunch of people. And it's like there's not necessarily somebody being held down at gunpoint that he would have to kill somebody for. Like, it's just... But yeah, they put him in the right scenario for it. And then, like, even if you want to criticize, like, the destruction and Man of Steel, I'm like, look, these are two super powerful aliens. It's good. Like, he's trying to destroy the world.
This is an alien invasion where they're terraforming the planet and have an army with them. It's not going to be, like...
The only way you could make it any less was if he, like, took him to the Antarctic and fought him there. But even then, the terraforming's still going on.
And he's not the only Kryptonian. It's the rest of Zod's team that's still there, too. What's he going to do? What is he going to do? But no, I agree.
Meet me in the ocean. We'll fight this out.
I think Aquaman will watch. He's drunk.
Aquaman. No. I had something specific I was about to say. What were we just talking about?
The destruction. The
before the destruction and before the... Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Like, coming out of Man of Steel, like, none of these complaints about Henry's Superman existed. So, like, in the buffer years between Man of Steel and Batman versus Superman, you weren't hearing people go, Henry Cavill Superman never smiles. Henry Cavill Superman's not optimistic. Henry Cavill Superman's not this and that. You know, it all starts with BVS. You're right. And it moves forward from there. And it does completely tarnish his legacy as the character for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I would say this movie lacks to me, and when I added this to my Letterboxd history, I rated it 4 out of 5. And the only reason that's keeping this from being a 5 out of 5 is I feel like there's an emotional core missing. And the easiest way to explain that is to say Superman's parents in this, so the Ma and Pa Kent... I don't know what Snyder is doing.
That's
but,
the biggest issue I have with the movie.
It
His
does
parents
not work.
Suck.
It doesn't work. I told this to Robbie last night. Like, the way that Jonathan Kent was raising this child, it's a miracle he didn't turn out like the kid from Brightburn. Because it doesn't... Like, the whole point of the Kents is that they're the ones who instill Superman with his values.
Yeah.
They're the reason that he's selfless and wants to help the world, and all of the good things about Superman are supposed to come from them. But in this movie, like, Pa Kent's like, you should let those kids on that bus die. You should have just let him die. Or, like, you should let me die to this tornado, which is the dumbest death scene.
Yeah.
I get what they were going for with, like, the Jonathan Kent angle, where he was like, hey, you know, the world would freak out if they knew you existed. But at no point does mass panic ever trump, like, loss of life. Like, it's like in a situation where a school bus full of kids are drowning. Like, you're telling me that you would rather them drown so that the world doesn't know an alien exists than potentially the world find out that there's a superhero out there and save a bunch of kids? Like, it's not an equivalent. It's not a balanced scale. It makes no sense. Like, people are gonna freak out. It's like, but does that really mean he should just sit by and watch everybody die? It makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, why would he become Superman when they're raising him to not do that?
Well, and his stupid death scene is tied to the values they put in Jonathan in this movie, yeah. But the problem is, like I said, it all the root of it is that his values are off, because, like, you know, obviously he dies from a heart attack in a lot of Superman media, yeah. And the point of that is that it's the one thing Superman can't do. It's the one thing Clark can't save him, uh-huh. from. You know what I'm saying? He can't, you know, and so it's like he feels helpless, and that's kind of like the whole point behind his death in those iterations of Superman. So it's like it made sense tied to the values they were giving him and the theme they were pushing in the movie, but it's just not a Jonathan Kent type theme. Like, that's just not what he is. But yeah.
That's yeah. the only thing that could have made the movie better was if they wrote the parents different.
Yeah, because without it, like, you have the emotional core of the relationship between Clark and Lois, which is good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, it's hard to get a good sense of the character, and all the time jumps sort of don't help. And I see what you're talking about, like why that's good instead of just playing it out all in yeah. sequential order.
They did a good job with it considering the fact that they did it. But
yeah, but yeah. The one thing that doesn't really make any sense is that jump from him being told not to save people and yeah. then him wandering the world and doing it anyway. Like, there's not a clear connecting yeah. point mm-hmm. to that.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that until just now as we were talking about it.
Yeah,
that's the problem for me with this one.
Yeah, I mean, it's a valid criticism. It's one of those things where it's like, no matter how much I love this movie and no matter how much I defend Zack Snyder, it is a problem, which no movie's perfect anyway.
Except for Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which is perfect.
Which is, it's
also
a
Batman
phenomenal
Begins,
movie.
But, you know.
Well, yeah.
Batman Begins also perfect.
Those are all as close to perfect as you can get, for sure. But no, I understand. It's a pretty valid criticism. It's pretty pretty important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have much of a defense for it, so...
What else was I going to see? I was going to say...
Supporting cast?
Sound design was something we were going to talk about. Because, like you said, the soundtrack...
Fantastic.
Phenomenal. Hans Zimmer...
It's perfect.
I think yeah. the greatest superhero soundtrack ever. That's my opinion. I don't think of anything that trumps. And I love the Dark Knight soundtrack. I like the Danny Elfman Spider-Man soundtrack. But nothing... Nothing
it's
touches
so
this
good.
For me. Nothing. Yeah. I mean, like, I really, there's no way they could ever trump
everything
this, especially for a Superman character.
Everything from the orchestral pieces that they wrote for it to, like, the songs that they got the royalties for different scenes.
Like Seasons by
Chris
Cornell.
Yes.
That scene
That's
is
a great
perfect.
One. Yeah.
Yes. Like, they've just
it
made all
the
of
vibe.
The right decisions mm-hmm. for every yes. shot with that.
Well, Flight's still the best scene in,
oh
I think, probably
gosh.
The entire DCEU.
Yes.
One, even, like, the Ideal of Hope, like, the main Superman
mm-hmm.
theme.
Uh-huh.
Is so good.
Yeah. It's a masterpiece.
It makes me so mad that they just started using the John Williams
yeah.
theme for
yeah.
Henry Cavill
well,
after this.
The way that they close out the movie in this, probably my favorite scene in this movie is the final scene, because it's like after all of this, it's like Clark has finally discovered mm. who he is, you know, what his identity is.
He's decided
and now
who
he's,
he wants to
now
be.
Now he's at the planet and like he's got the glasses and it's like this super cool aha moment, right? And then the music picks up in the background and then he smiles and then it cuts. Smile, by the
yeah.
way. He smiles, right? Right?
Yeah.
And then it cuts to the title card, and then the music plays at the end of that. That right there, that piece at the end is the best. I mean, that's the quintessential Superman theme for me. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
agreed.
But even beyond the soundtrack, like the sound design, like all the little warbles
yes.
and crackles,
yes.
like the yeah the sound of the world
yeah.
engine
yeah.
makes.
Yeah. Yes, I like that.
It's so good.
Yes, and like the sonic boom whenever
yeah,
he,
when
takes
he takes
off and yeah it just
and
sounds
then when
so
he
powerful
breaks the sound barrier
yeah.
as well
mm-hmm.
it's so good yeah
yeah speaking of the world engine sound that world engine takedown sequence with like the water swirling around
oh.
and the sound design and, like when it's cutting back to Perry and Lombard trying to rescue was it Jenny
yes that's a pretty emotional
that
scene
is really
that's
really
intense.
Good like it's so tense
yes. Well, and then, like, Perry's, like, the way he looks at Jenny when, it, like, they both look like they know they're gonna die.
Yeah.
And then that, and then Superman, like, at the very last moment dealing with it, like, it was perfect. I thought, yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really
yeah.
good. And,
Also, it was really cool. It was, like, a nice little, soft introduction into the kryptonite of that universe, too.
Yeah.
Because it were, like, they were pieces of the home world being terraformed onto
yeah.
Earth. And so it was, like, he was weaker around all of it.
Yeah.
He was visibly weaker. And I remember watching that, like, even as a child. Because I was in, what, 6th, 7th grade when this movie came out?
Yeah.
Right.
Either way, like,
middle
I mean,
school.
The first time I watched it, I was like... It was like an aha moment. Like,
yeah.
this point at the screen, I was like, it's kryptonite.
Yeah.
It, but yeah,
it's
super, super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of Perry White, I love Lawrence Fishburne.
Oh, he's
Perry
great.
White.
He is great.
His little single earring that he has.
Yes.
It's just
so good.
It's so good. Like, this movie is really well cast.
Yes, it really is.
Like, Amy Adams does great as Lois Lane.
I think she's
Lane.
Great, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think the casting for the Kents is good. If the writing was better, yeah. It would be
I think
good. For
sure. Michael Shannon as General Zod is
yes.
Yeah.
The best, I would so argue, good. The best DCU villain, too. Or DCEU, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I also love, what's his name, as Jor-El.
Oh, Russell
yeah.
Crowe.
Yeah,
Russell
Crowe.
Russell Crowe.
Okay.
Perfect.
Jor-El was incredible. I forgot how awesome he was.
He's a psycho in this movie. Yes. I love it.
It's so funny. He's just like wreaking so much havoc at the very beginning of the movie, and he's just the coolest guy.
Yeah.
Like, watching Jor-El, I was sitting there going, man, if they had written Kevin Costner so that the dad character was values wise as cool as Jor-El was with like the action scenes and the way he was rebelling against all the evil going on and whatnot, that would have been
I was gonna say my favorite thing about Jor-El is when he's getting taken away and then just all of a sudden starts doing kung fu
just
out of nowhere. It's so good.
I will say
fights them all off.
they made Krypton in this movie so much cooler than they ever had any to make it, because I've gone on record to say this before, I absolutely hate every scene set on Krypton in the original Christopher Reeve Superman movies. They are so boring. Every single one of them. It just looks like a giant chunk of ice. And everybody in there is so boring. I don't like Marlon Brando. Yeah. I don't like any of those guys. I fast forward through that when I watch those movies. The opening scene in Krypton, the 20-minute scene or whatever, was incredible.
It feels like something that's evolved beyond what Earth is. Mm-hmm.
Which, speaking of, there's a really weird tie between Russell Crowe and Marlon Brando that's really fascinating to me. So Russell Crowe was a musician at some point, like he made music, and one of his songs was called "I Just Want to Be Like Marlon Brando."
Well, buddy.
Wow. Yeah. So success. Yeah. You took Marlon Brando's role.
Congrats. And did it better.
Did it much better. I will say the funniest part about the Krypton scene to me was when he's stealing the codex, which is like the skull with all of the Kryptonian DNA in it, and he climbs out of the water and just smashes it against the rock.
He just doesn't care,
He goes, wham!
Yeah.
Just like, this thing is like millions of years old. What if it shattered? Yeah. What would you do?
There's the whole movie right there.
Right.
No, but I think... I love all of that. And I found myself a few times through it going, I do, even with the problems I have with Kevin Costner's Jonathan Kent, I still, all things considered, didn't hate his character. I hated his values.
The death scene also kind of did a lot to ruin that character. It's really, really bad.
It had nothing to do with the acting or the casting.
Other than that, it was like, I still caught myself going, I would like to see Jor-El and Jonathan Kent interact.
Yeah.
Like, I want to see these two versions of the character talk. Like, I mean, I think it'd be so cool.
Yeah, like the Kung Fu Panda 3 scenario where his dad's in.
That would have been such a interesting angle to take if at some point that if they had found some way to like for him to find the Fortress of Solitude at a younger age when he still had his dad.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so he ends up like a hologram or something like that.
And then for like the two of them to interact and help. Like, he gets the values and stuff.
Be like the angel and devil on his shoulder.
Exactly.
Pa Kent's obviously the devil in this scenario.
Jor-El's like, you can save them, Cal. You can save all of them. Jonathan Kent's like, let him die.
Kill them. You don't just let him die. Kill him. Just do it.
Oh, man.
What else was I going to say? Okay, this is one of those things we probably need to start trying to wrap it up soonish. General Swanwick being Martian Manhunter in secret is really, really ridiculous in hindsight. Like, every one of these movies that I watch through...
We should probably wait and talk about that for Justice League.
It's just, it's funny in this because, like, the whole world is going to die, and then he's just like...
Standing in the war room.
Yeah, he's like, well, I wish Superman was going to do something about this.
Send a missile at him.
Bro, you can do it. You're as strong, as strong, if not stronger than Superman.
Yeah, Martians are,
Get off your butt in the war room and go do this, bro. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things that doesn't make a whole lot of sense in retrospect.
Yeah.
Unless it's like Martian Manhunter ended up on Earth after Batman versus Superman, and General Swanwick like died in secret or something, and then like he took his place. That's the only way I could see it.
That was the theory
sense.
We were talking about the other night. I was like, what if? How, like, has he always been this guy, or did he show up and kill him and take his place?
Because that makes
point.
More sense than him sitting through two world-ending catastrophes and doing nothing about it.
Actually, three. Because he sits through all of Justice League and does nothing about it, too.
Oh, wait, yeah, you got a point. Oh, my word. You've got a point. I didn't even count the movie he shows up in.
How many times is Brogan going to sit and do nothing before he's going to show up in hell?
That's a great point.
Anyway, do you guys have any other thoughts about this movie before we start wrapping up?
Yeah, I'm just going to put a bow on it. I'm just going to say I really do think this is like the perfect modernization of the Superman character. I think everything in this movie was done in a unique way. A way that's faithful to the comics, but also makes sense. And it's like even mm-hmm. stuff down to like the Fortress of Solitude being like a crashed alien ship instead of a bunch of crystals in the Arctic, you know. Like all of that, and then like the meaning behind his symbol, you know, the reason his suit looks the way that it does, you know, the reason that Zod is after him, the, you know, the machine, everything about it, I feel like just ties together so intricately and so well, and it just makes sense. Mm-hmm. And it feels like a perfect modern take on a classic character. Yeah. And it kills me every time I talk about this, because I'm like, you had everything right there. You had it perfectly laid out. And then it just, over the next 10 years, we not only watched potentially the greatest Superman casting of all time go to waste, but also 10 years worth of characters and stories go to waste, because they couldn't get their stuff together and find a unilateral vision for this story.
Yeah, and just to sow the seeds of disaster, I will say, I think the fact that Zack Snyder was not the Kevin Feige overlooking the story...
I agree.
...is the problem.
Amen.
Here.
Agreed.
Because he was directing it behind the scenes.
Too
like he
many
was
cooks
the one
in the kitchen.
Well, because he was just the director... Yeah. Doing these few movies, he wasn't overlooking the whole thing.
They were letting him do his story, but they still had like the producers still had the executives had the power. So it's like they were fine until critically the movies started to kind of waver, and then they got their hands involved.
But there was never really a Kevin Feige figure at DC
directing
everything.
Just a bunch of heads arguing at each other. Yeah. And also, I would argue that obviously I've got problems with Kevin Feige, but he cares more about the IP and the characters than these suits do.
Than,
you know,
Walter Hamada.
Yeah.
God bless.
I give the movie 4 out of 5 stars for sure. It's not a perfect movie by any stretch, but it is the best Superman movie we've ever had for sure.
And even if you don't watch the rest of them,
watch this one. Yeah. You don't have
think
to watch anything else.
Yeah, think
but
of
watch
it,
this.
Think of it as a standalone movie if you want to. That it exists in its own universe, and somewhere out there, Henry Cavill's Superman is still doing Superman things and saving people. And we'll leave it at that. We'll keep it disconnected from the mess that is the rest of this universe.
Agreed.
But just my last thought here is that this makes me really, really excited for Superman Legacy, because we have the opportunity for someone to come along and do right by this character and do right by him more than one time.
Please. Yeah. Well, and the fact that Superman's being prioritized again after years of not being prioritized, because Man of Steel really and Batman versus Superman were the last times that this character was put front and center in this universe. I mean, think about it. Like Shazam forward, this character kind of just...
Vanished.
Yeah. And people... And it was like, it wasn't like, how could we get Superman involved? It was always, how much longer can we go without Superman? How can we keep Superman away from this? How many more headless cameos can we send their way? Yeah. And so it's like the most important character in all of DC Comics not being present for like a 5 to 6 year span of the company.
Crazy.
Is ridiculous to me.
Yeah, it's insane.
And so, so James Gunn at least understanding the importance of Superman and us getting a little bit of clarity that, you know, he'll be around for a while is, you know, a little bit of confidence.
That's promising.
It's very confidence ensuing. But I think watching through these, I realize there's more hurt than there is happiness.
I
really am. I think the more I watch through these movies,
Man of Steel
the better.
Again.
The more the
I focus on the pain. The only thing that's real.
No, but I think the more I watch it, the more ready I am to just. To move past it. I'm gonna cry. Don't let me cry. No.
Joss Whedon's Justice League.
Aquaman.
He will let you down. He will make you hurt.
Walter Hamada.
250 mil on CGI and marketing.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope you guys continue to enjoy this journey that we go on.
As it gets worse.
As it descends into absolute madness and chaos.
The only thing we have to look forward to is the Snyder Cut at the end.
Yes, because we're going to do all these and then watch the Snyder Cut again at the very end. That's our light palate at the end of the cleanser. Tunnel.
It's the only thing keeping me going right now.
Well, for me, that's the end of that universe anyway. That's the end of that story. It ends after that, so.
Yeah, but...
Watch Man of Steel.
Watch Man of Steel, yeah. Our Instagram is at SWT Podcast. Our Twitter is at Sorry We Try. Do we have a Threads account?
Not yet.
I won't do it. I don't care. I don't care if making a Threads account would get us a million followers instantly. I will not do it. I do not care.
Watching by the wayside to see what happens. And then I'll decide if I want to get in or not.
Yeah. What's the other thing? Our email is thepodcastmen@gmail.com. Merch. What's the merch link? bit.ly/swtmerch.
All the links for everything are on our website,
which is
sorrywetried.com.
And use code SWTPodcast at bodbygod.net for 20% off your order.
Bingo.
We forgot to record the ad, as we always do.
we can always cut in the middle of an episode and paste one in if we need.
Yeah, I just want to start doing that naturally because
that's fair.
I always forget. And I generally have to start like just the one episode we remember to record one. I just have to use the same one in like all of them. So
it's fine. They drop like a week, week in between. People forget.
But yeah, I'm Spencer Goland.
I'm Harrison Brock.
I'm Superman's hair gel. I messed that one up.
That was good.
Stay fresh, cheese.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's your turn.
These weren't just innocent bystanders. These were enemies who felt the wrath of God's backhand. When tough love must get even tougher, God's backhand. When evil plays rough, God can play rougher.